this as the evening goes on, so. First of all, I just want to thank Paul and Rosie for being so nice to me and putting up with me from the very this afternoon. Delighted to be in Cork, any excuse. I'm going to actually begin by reading a poem that came about because of my last visit to Cork, which is all of, I think, 7 years ago. Couldn't believe that today. When were you last here? I think 2002, shame on me. But this poem came about after a long drive from Dublin. My husband was driving. I was doing my usual thing of looking out the window and being sort of beautiful and shocked his watch with the navigation, and this poem is called Road Sign. From a distance, I think it's a cat, a black cat, a sign and a good one at that. But then, as I get near, it sees me, turns back in towards whatever wildness seeded it beside the motorway. A baby fox, on tenuous, inked legs, skittering away. Being in a different city always brings out the dog in me, I'm sorry. I was in Italy a couple of weeks ago and I had to read this poem. I have this ambition that I want to live long enough to write a poem about every street in Dublin. I plan to live to a great old age, obviously. So, this is Grafton Street. For a while, the closed hours ticked in the dark between the closed ranks, waited as the air stilled the tissue paper folds, carefully creased into place. The shutter flickered as dreams turned unevenly behind it, an eyelid between what is real and what can be bought and carried off, or worn by the mannequins that hold their aching poses by the escalator. Each raised arm, a cold stone wing on a graveyard angel, dressed for flight. But now, the day is opening again. The light is a colour that runs and keeps running. It has to be returned. It seeps in as the metal stretches, and the door is unlocked, and the sound of the street slips past the security man, to whom it seems as if the city never slept. He barely notices that the gutters are coated in dust, the wind will lift, to send away a blown skirt all over the slow curved hill of the street. The sea can be felt then, its salt pressed to air shades, invisible among the roof flakes. The shop assistant, arriving for work, walks in as white fluorescence stutters, sits, unpacked, unfolded, taken out. Her day ahead is a shirt, still stained. Another city, another country, that famous line in the go-between is that the past is another country. They do things differently there. This poem is called In My Country. And it's new. I've got to this one. There, let me ask you a question. You're all being paid from home. In another country. I imagine this is how it began. Your face a lexicon to me, a foreign language. Its alphabet is strange. When I look back, my expression might have been a book you couldn't judge. Both covers gone. The front page, title, author, lost, torn off. The inside, empty, foxed. But in another country, everything is done differently. Truth is shifted, slant, a shadow glint of moon on water, or a knife blade going under after it's been flung there by a murderer. Written on your eyes could not be thought forever dead. It is the ticking silences. I skimmed the surface, read your face as mystery, as poetry, as crime. As you, I think, read mine. Memory poems. This particular poem was written for my daughter, Vanessa. Hopeless. This is how it will be. A large dog, yellow, I think, will shake himself free of a river, a sea. Before he is dry, he will run to you, cloaked in a river, a different sea. Sometimes, in winter perhaps, you would shift the screen of curtains, sit the night through an open window, lean across your kitchen sink to lift the cat again. Black, I imagine. His fur will be short, dense, filled with fog. You'd breathe him in, and in your present tense, think only of your past. Someday, somewhere, in a city I can't see, a woman will pass you in a crowd. Drugged by her perfume, the heavy scent she will leave after her, you won't struggle as you fall back to now. And you will remember me telling you this. I'm going to read two poems based around photographs. My husband takes photographs a lot. We've done a bit of work together on photographs and poems. But this first poem is like a warning, really. I mean, everybody has a photograph in a drawer at home that relates to their past. It might be a bad photograph. It could be just somebody that people you're currently living with have never heard of. And this is called Honey Forest. And it's actually not about what things that it's called Honey Forest. I look up her number in the book. There aren't too many there. 5 or 6 at most. None of them admit to her identifying initials. Will I call? I could listen to her voice in safety, untraceable at someone else's desk. Silent as a shut drawer in a deserted office. Dust circles in a shaft of sunlight. Mocks the day's progression over folders. And the brown box files with my handwriting on them, making me wince. There is an obscenity involved in such honesty. An exposure of souls in the looped L's. In the old, closed tighter than his arm. Around her shoulder in the photograph. I turned over in my hands. In my head, the dead syllables trickle. Two names. The place words slurred to one where two should be. Pine Forest. It is black and white. It is all so obvious. I look again. My fingernails, the name, disinterested declaration of innocence. It has nothing to do with us, they say, betraying nothing I could use as evidence. I closed the book. I put away the photograph's most telling lie. If she had cared to look beyond the trees, beyond the slanted summer sky, she would have seen me there, a glimmer in his eyes. Next poem is also a photo poem, but it was a photograph I saw of Scott Fitzgerald. I think it was in the Irish Times a couple of years ago. And it was sometime towards the end of his life, and you could see A, that he was a drinker, and B, that he was so obviously Irish. He's such an Irish face, you know. Not just to our connected, but I'm not saying that. Uh-huh. What really got me was that there was no artifice in the photograph. He was completely naked, you know. And this is called Earlier That Day. Earlier that day, cut by the light in the bathroom at 9 a.m, he had bled. Thin blood mapping out the razor's edge, naming a course across his mirrored face. Shaking, he had stooped to track resisting water in the sink. Thrown into his eyes, it forced the lashes there to separate, divide like lover's hands or early stars surprised. The folded towel gave up its swollen comfort as he opened it and laid it out, still warm, across the fingers he had splayed and readied to obliterate, to numb. So that later, in the studio, there was nothing left of him. No trace of his stare to be sifted through hard glass by the acid glare of the camera's hooded, sudden eyes. Now for something completely different. I'm very interested in this poem earlier and working in form, in poetic form. Although every poem arrives in its own form. You know, I like working in form. This is a new one, and it's a parallel. I decided to read it because I know when I wake up in the B&B where I'm staying tonight in the morning, I won't know where the hell I am when I open my eyes. And this is a poem that kind of mirrors that feeling. I wrote this in Germany now. I'm using more professional. This is Morning Paradise. It's strange. These are the cities the heart goes to. These are the cities the heart goes to. On a night when the darkness is a train. On a night when the darkness is a train. The darkness goes on to where the heart is a night, a train. Are these the cities? In the morning, you open your eyes to a stranger. In the morning, you open your eyes to a stranger. Geography of things, your mirror, bed, chair. Geography of things, your mirror, bed, chair. You open your eyes, a stranger in the mirror to geography of morning, bed, chair, your things. Where are you? Your eyes open to these morning things, a bed, a chair, a mirror. A stranger to the darkness, the geography of cities is in your heart. The night train goes on. I'll keep that one then, I won't throw it out. From something complicated to something very simple. It's another new one, but there was all a big fashion about 10 or 15 years ago for people to read lit poems. I don't know if it's still do it. And I remember reading it with somebody who read like a shopping list. And it worked, because it was written, just worked the way it was written. So I'd never done one. And again, Paul and I were talking about this on the way down, that a way poems can kind of, you're trying to write a poem in a particular shape or form. Well, the real poem is trying to force its way out. And this is an experience I had with the next poem. I don't know many drafts, it's a very unsuccessful poem. And then I suddenly just stripped it back, just missed it, which is done. A branch of slant vibrato after the blackbird flown. An only child, stone heels on a seesaw, ground around her. A small ghost keels in salt water crow down in a big tide. The half moon's silver tilted, dipped in an inky sky. Those five words glanced across a table's width. The balance shift was lifted then on the dark chart of your eyes. Right. On the way down today, passed through Charleville on the train, and I have cousins, first cousins, second cousins, third cousins, once removed, wherever they are. I've never actually been there. Last year, my late father was from Barb in County Offaly, my mother was from Kilfinnan, my late mother was from Kilfinnan in Limerick, and she had cousins in Charleville. I've been to Barr last year at a community festival down there, and I went to see where my father grew up and all that. I've never been to where my mother grew up. But the pair of them have been on my mind all week. For all sorts of reasons. In the olden days, the religious superstitions, whatever people would say, when somebody is on your mind like that, we need a prayer. However we define prayer these days. Maybe what I'm doing now is praying for something. I'll read two poems about this. The first one is Vertigo, which is a memory of my father. It's not the only thing he left me, this free-falling, light-headed lurch towards nothing in particular. Nor is it the best you could have wished for me, that I should be gripped by the same plain fear you couldn't even name in the end. In the end, I tried to sound it out for you. Looking down from my great height, feeling two seasons shake this tree. This month's bluey green, undying obscenity. My toes curled at a port of light. No, it was never your intention to leave me, to go like that. Stepping off into air, the colour of your honest eyes. Quietly surprised first, imagine. By the ease with which you went spinning down as the ground came up, while the wind sang the ears backwards in his head. My mother, on the other hand, was completely different. Although it's easy to love, it's an uncomplicated relationship. The love my mother would choose. It's hard to pin down, either in the flesh or in words. And speaking of form earlier, I think it was Adrienne Rich said that she used form as best sort of love to handle a difficult subject. This is what I think I'm glad to mean. Three short poems with an overall title of words to form my mother. Two of the forms are pretty traditional and one is not traditional. One. While you were living, I could never breathe life into you to put you on a page. Although, God knows I tried enough to lead your imprint there. My pen became a cage that held you in, and only let you go like a skin of stone on water, grey as air. In air, a trace of us flow. I could never face you in that way you face into each morning. Eyes tight around the light that glitters everything you'd ever reached for as your birthright in this world. You eluded me to sing and teach to write yourself. Word by word, you slipped away from me. I never heard. I am trying again to write of you, your complexity, your kind simplicity. As usual, no word of it is true. And all the images I watered, grew, I cut away, and do not want to see again, as I am trying to write of you. your breathing flooded me and led me here through tenements and farmers fled from Germany. I wonder if one word of it is true. Or if perhaps you never really knew yourself, but always knew enough of me that I would try again to write for you, from whose hands I long ago withdrew and now can't hold, won't hold the memory, so probably no word of this truth. To die just once is all you have to do, you said, and understood how it would be. I am trying again to write of you. As usual, no word of it is true. 3. Goodbye, my friend. I'll see you tomorrow. The last words I spoke to you that night, not quite closing the door, leaving a gap as small as your voice had become, as small as a child. I looked back, head lowered, eyes already somewhere else, in the chair beside your bed you tried to rest, your radio silent for once. Your curtains were half drawn against the light that snagged in the branches of the tree outside your window. The sky glazed over, grey subsumed into the black. The sky glazed over, grey subsumed into the black that snagged in the branches of the tree outside your window. For once, your curtains were half drawn against the light. In the chair beside your bed, you tried to rest, your radio silent. I looked back, head lowered, eyes already somewhere else. As small as your voice had become, as small as a child I spoke to you last night, not quite closing the door, leaving a gap. Goodbye, I'll see you tomorrow, the last words. Last summer I was talking with a few people in Ireland that actually experienced good weather, because I was on Achill Island for 2 weeks midsummer, and it was like being in Crete, and it was amazing, and I spoke to you there to write. Can you all hear me, by the way?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I don't know how much you know about the Hymie Fall Cottage, but it's near the beach, halfway up the mountain. It's a beautiful place. The house is amazing. I was there all on my own. I was trying to write, but sometimes I got distracted. I just thought of what this poem was about. But even as I was being distracted, I knew I was going to get poem. This is called Housekeeping at the Hymie Fall Cottage. First, unmake your bed. Drag duvets, pillows to the edges of the bedstead. Shake out clouds where dreamlessly have cooled, evaporated over fuchsia hedges. Open the door to the yard. The sun is there already, trapped by the hard but lovely garden bench. Listen as the kettle brings itself to boiling point with a click. Unlatch the windows one by one. Damp dust ledges, move feathers, stones, shells. If you must, attend to them. Then sweep an arc into the corners where nothing, nothing can escape the brush of hand, the bin with its big mouth. Look into the sink. Can you see your face? If not, you'll bleach. The dishwasher won't fill itself. Rinse tea towels. Pad out the clothesline on bare feet like that cartoon cat. White sack, white shirt, sleek black, all-in-one dinner suit that you surprised on the hot tin roof of your car in the driveway slowly. Check to see if he's left talking. Go back in and punch the sofa cushions, otherwise they'll get complacent. Ashton the Great will have to wait. It can be tossed out later. When you've done all this, and not before, close the bathroom door behind you. Finally, choose music. Schubert's Lieder, the cottage deserves nothing less. Using language that speaks fluently, polish your poem. The only thing that was missing from that whole scenario above was a glass of wine. You pour yourself a glass of wine, but that doesn't work with me because I'm that very unusual thing. I'm an Irish woman, Irish poet, Irish person, sitting drink. And this next poem is, I suppose, a description of a night where I wouldn't mind a stretch. This is called Skin Hook. And for anyone who isn't Irish here, I think I've got the hand out of glossary, which is called a euphemism. Skin Hook. Headrest for being so damn bright, your own eyes smart. It's raining. It's Thursday night. The tables are bulls of this and that, this and that. You can't even be honest as to why your heart is sore. The bottle is gambled, offered, and your glass clearly offered. Good blood. Waits to be blotted with viscosity to get a skin full. It's like a sin, that one, concerning very bad things we didn't actually do, but only because we were stuck. Argue all you like about needles and angels, or camels and pins, it's still a sin. At some stage, someone fills you in on how to pour the perfect G and T. The trick is in the finishing with, listen will you, this is the important bit, just a slick of G, a slope of seemingly. But your spirit sinks as you hear yourself and no one else say, I don't drink. Clink. Clink. The room is a fog of that and this, that and this. The atmosphere so thick it can only be half crushed by a cup of tea. And I'm coming to the end now. Two more. This poem came to me a year or two back. I had a very bad weekend. Not saying what, very bad weekend. And it was a scare that kind of turned into a 4 or 5 month long scare. This was at the beginning of it. And Joy, which a friend of mine who's a painter and she lives in Clare, she rang me and she was absolutely lazy with the thing. She said something that made me ask for hard. I forgot all about myself. I got over myself. This is called Dolphin for Sheena Mars. Until then, you believed in your mirror. It's kept at rendering of body, face, shape, slurred by a lapse of muscles behind resonance caps. You've had all that time to get used to what is told while you hovered, a ghost in your own skin, afloat on an ocean of rumors. But she's drawn you a map of a different port, your friend in the west. Blue ink waves, a blunt end of pier, a hint of wind around that little boat's taut sail, a sun with a smile implied in its halo of spiked rays, her house marked with an X. Before a word not anywhere in your doctor's voice arrives with a bone's unknowing tone to take you quietly. You're scanning the wall in your sitting room for a simple confirmation of the yellow. Daffodil? Custard? You notice how it stays the same shade chosen from the chart. you find your mind asked, but what else is there besides the heart? Later, on the phone again, you are trying to explain why you won't make it to the West next week, when she begins to spin a story about swimming off White Strand. How the surface sea had opened to show teeth. Huge, she said, a huge, sleek, grey. Then a word you've never heard her use before, or since, to describe her fright in such a presence. And you're laughing, laughing, laughing for the first, the only time that long weekend, as if your very life depended on it. And finally, you have read everything I set out to read. And you're probably all thinking, even we'll finish up now with a poem with a title that's a bit ironic, really, because we live in Ireland, but it's written in Spain. And it's called A Tink of Water to Mary and James Lynch. I think of water as a word shaped by a child. Its colour, quiet flowers that surround me, breaks on senses. Overheard in someone else's garden, it is fluid features, speaking in a language I don't understand. I think of water as a bird above the roof, a song still in dust, a tongue of air with dust breathe, and the day becomes pared down to this, a star, a moon, an artery of concrete lane, warm as the blood between the houses. I think of water as the world cools on a dove's one note. At my feet, a polka-dotted cat absorbs the kindling quick and whir of crickets. A flick of night moths pass, silently intent. They tease a single street light like a curse. And you are very much...